Siren Radio.
Brilliant. That's what we like to hear. And Abigail LeMay is with us as well. How are you, Abigail?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Just keeping the Canadian thing going. And the great news is that the well wishes of your good self to field leaders will be winging their way across the ocean, probably as we speak. So there we are. It's just a Canadian connection there. Phil, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. It has to be said that we've missed you on Wednesdays. I mean, we've had directors like Graham Harper taking over and, you know, sitting in there, Taryn Kay. It hasn't been the same, has it, Ben, really?
No, not at all,
We've kind of sort of been umming and ahhing about
it. But needing our dose of Phil, our weekly dose of Phil.
Our weekly dose of Phil. What's going to happen after the wedding? Who knows? But how are you, Phil Leonis?
Oh, I'll have nothing but time after the wedding.
There you go. But the most important thing at this stage...
And I'll desperately be in need of conversation with people who don't second-guess me constantly.
Right. This is boding so well.
The joys of marriage.
Exactly. It's great.
Really stuff. Selling it to everyone.
Moving dexterously on from that point of view, I'll give my little predictions in a few moments because I won't have a chance once Richard and Phil Leonis get into
this.
We're not
doing our predictions today. I don't know how many times I can tell you this. We lead up to our predictions. Today we'll discuss the nominees, the biggest snubs, the ones that we're happiest about. This is the appetizing cocktail hour conversation about the nomination before we get into the cutthroat, high stakes wagering of competition.
Right.
You're too excited, Alex. It's too premature.
Well, Richard sent in his predictions. That's all I should
say.
Well,
we'll have to hold on then, won't we? We'll have to hold on. So Richard's actually the one who's premature here.
Never mind. What's the weather for Lincoln going to be from your perspective in Los Angeles, Phil Leonis?
Well, it's going to be raining predictions, apparently. But in addition to that, I think you're looking at a high of 5 degrees Celsius. Right now, it looks like it's only 1 degree. That is 33 American Fahrenheit degrees. That's almost freezing, however you cut it. But it looks like gentle breezes, light cloud cover, very little chance of drizzle throughout the day.
In case you're wondering, so where's Gabriella? She's in a plane somewhere, flying. So we thought it's just...
She's mainly in the plane.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah. Abigail, I know it's a saga, but Phil Leonis is a director, and if he doesn't do the movie of your how you broke your hand skiing, I mean, you need to, one last time, what were you doing to actually ensure that you had that experience of an injury in the United States... And the only way to get safe across the border was to actually get airlifted to Canada.
I did not get airlifted. That's so dramatic. I just got driven back over because I live right across the border.
Mm-hmm.
But I was on a Black Diamond with my friends, and there was a ditch running across the hill, and my ski tips got the opposite side of the ditch, and I went flying down the hill.
Result, broken hand.
Yes.
I mean, Phil, is that a movie or is that a movie? Surely, just the Black Diamond. You could just base it on that thing alone, surely.
Well, she sounds so upbeat. I mean, for there to be a movie, we need to go through an entire chapter of I don't know, just dark, self-loathing.
It was pretty grim
recriminations.
And drive back.
Okay, all right. I mean, because it needs to be a story of overcoming the odds, of triumphing over this broken hand, the likes of which the world has never seen.
Right, right. Fair enough. I think maybe it was pretty average then.
It's a case of building up to that sort of thing. So, you know, we will hype the whole thing through. That's the important thing. And as I say, the American government is still shut down, Phil, so no change there. Is that having any major effect on yourself? I mean, obviously, we're getting lots of federal employees who aren't being paid anything, but are you fretting about this?
I mean, I'm glad we finally have gotten down to the important issue, which is how does the government shutdown affect Phil? Because it isn't just the government employees, 800,000 government employees. It's also what people never want to talk about. It's government contractors also, which pushes the number of people into the millions. And contractors are people that, unlike the government employees, who are in terrible situations, don't kid yourself, but they will eventually get their back pay. The contractors don't get back pay. So it's even more dire than I think news covers. It's affecting the GDP. This goes on much longer. We're looking at a recession. But all of that aside, there's safety concerns everywhere. The Air Traffic Controllers Union issued dire warnings today that already flights in the air are in danger, that mistakes are being made because air traffic controllers who are already working 6 days a week, 60 hours a week because they haven't hired enough people already, are now working for free, working unpaid, and having to leave their 60-hour-a-week job and then drive Uber. And so it's at critical mass. And, you know, all jokes aside, how it could affect Phil Lernes is I think we're a week away from airports shutting down, from flights stopping. And that would really not bode well for a wedding that sees most of the people flying into Los Angeles.
Even though I sent an RSVP eventually saying I was unable to actually attend, I might have changed my mind, just turned up, but can't do it now because obviously it's years. So.
Well, you could
he was looking for an excuse.
You could always claim show business emergency. Whoa. And they would reopen an airline terminal.
Or go private. Go private. Hmm. We'll have to set up a charter airline just for this wedding, I think.
Interesting thought, man. Phil, it's the welcome return of Emma Street and Keira Alsbrook. Would you like to just quiz them? Would you like to quiz them on what they've been doing since we last spoke, literally last year, with these guys? So it's over to you, Phil. Just quiz our latest, newest midweek driver, Spran Sparkling, wonderful, fresher level ones, really. I mean, you know, you've got Ben, obviously a seasoned pro, level three, Abigail on an exchange journey with us at least until April. Mm-hmm. Then it's back to the bank.
Yeah.
Sort of work our way through that whole process. So over to you, Phil. A few moments with Emma and or Keira.
Emma, Keira, what have I missed? I've been gone a few weeks. What have I missed?
Nothing really besides sleeping. That's all I've done over Christmas.
That's very good. So astral travelling, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually spoken to you, Phil. So
really?
No. Because
you've never spoken to Phil Lernes?
No, I've never been introduced.
Well.
Count this as a formal introduction.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I mean, Phil, I thought, was becoming a bit of a regular on Thursday morning slots as well as Emma, but this is the first time Emma Street. Yeah. Well, would you like to tell Phil and our listener, who might be just joining us, a bit more about Emma Street?
Oh, God, no.
And begin by telling everyone what you think of me so far.
Oh, that's like... I'm joking.
I'm joking. That's
I'm not a very interesting person.
You know, I mean, in a few moments' time, once Phil and Richard start chatting, I will be going upstairs to get the office, to get to my office to actually deliver by hand Keira and Emma's calendars.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
You've got to have your calendar. That's kind of the initiation
it
into...
It is very critical. Well, what the hey? Movement will be happening very shortly because this is the show where we'll be featuring Ian Lennox and Lou Bevan, of course, Countryside correspondent. We'll be finding out how Brexit, a no-deal Brexit, could actually impact massively, according to Friends of the Earth, Britain. And actually, we could become a dumping ground for Donald Trump. No change there, then. William Sitwell will be back with us. Award-winning William Sitwell and Precious Igbokwe. We'll be talking a bit more about how...
You haven't even brought up the fact that America is hours away from declaring war against Venezuela.
Well, you know, I mean, let's run with that if you wish, Phil. You know, I always like to say, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Huh, say it again.
All right, Edwin Starr.
Well, I don't know. Has the situation in Venezuela across a giant ocean made even headline news in the UK?
No. I know there was obviously a lot of stuff about Venezuela recently.
There is a mass protest against Venezuela's Maduro.
Isn't it close to civil war more so in Venezuela?
Well, yes. I mean, the election was declared to be illegal, and he responded to that by disbanding the assembly. But the United States has formally recognized the leader of the opposition as the interim president, and the response was that Americans have 72 hours to get out. All diplomatic relations have been cut off. Already, American press and diplomats were being held in custody there. So according to the president, all options are on the table. This is the quote that I love, and this is the thoughtful, reasoned approach you want from your leader. What options are they considering? He said, we're considering nothing. All options are on the table. Well, that's par for the course, I guess. No consideration, but all options are on the table. And it does seem that very quickly, in short order, there will be an oil embargo against this country. And of course, Venezuela's in a desperate economic situation. I read they have something like 1,000,000% inflation, and they desperately need those oil exports to generate any revenue in the country. So an embargo would lead to even more dire straits, and people in desperate situations with their back against the wall tend to respond violently. So I could see this escalating very quickly.
Have you got any wedding guests heading up to the wedding from Venezuela, Phil?
No, and when I said the situation could escalate violently, I was, of course, referring to my Oscar showdown with Richard Fitzwilliam. Yeah. Was that not clear?
Precisely. I mean, honestly, Abigail, it's enough to actually make you Canadians want to build a wall to keep those Americans out, really. It's a thought. Whatever. Okay, Richard Fitzwilliams will be up very shortly after Fleetwood Mac. Queens on screen. We can't get enough of them. Following the majestic romp of Olivia Colman and the favourite comes Mary, Queen of Scots, which offers two sovereigns for the price of one. Double the number, alas, doesn't make for double the fun, and Josie Rourke, an accomplished theatre director on her filmmaking debut, struggles mightily to keep this elaborate costume souffle from collapsing. I've seen it. Enjoyed it-ish after a point. Saoirse Ronan is fantastic, but what do my words matter when we've actually got the ace, amazing Richard Fitzwilliams ready and set and talk about Stan and Ollie and Mary, Queen of Scots, and whoa, I mean, we could go into David Tennant. I mean, Eva MacDonald will be delighted if we talk David Tennant.
I would be very delighted, yes.
Hoor, hoor, hoor. Oh, very beardy. Hoor.
What was that?
David Tennant.
That's his attempt at David Tennant.
Richard, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I am fine. I have to say that that was... which review were you reading from?
Well, that was Anthony Quinn reviewing the Tablet from the Art System. And again, in terms of... It wasn't a major thumbs up. Lots of sort of issues there in terms of the character.
It's a challenging film, no question about that.
I was personally very disappointed that we didn't see the little terrier emerge from Mary Queen of Scots' dress when she had her head cut off at the end. I thought it was a big lack there. And of course, she never actually did meet Harley Quinn in the way that she's portrayed. She didn't meet, as I say, Harley Quinn, who plays Elizabeth I. Or is it Margot Robbie? Phil Lianis is in Los Angeles.
Harley Quinn?
Yes.
Who is Harley Quinn?
Harley Quinn is... Who is Harley Quinn? Come on now. If you haven't seen Suicide Squad, she's got her own movie.
Oh, I see it in one of your in-jokes.
No. Thank you. That's good. Let's just set the scene, because Phil Lianis is keeping count in Los Angeles. In the studio, we have Kira.
Hello.
Emma.
Hello.
Hello.
Ben.
Hello.
Abigail.
Hello.
Hi.
And Eva McDonald.
Hello, good morning.
There we are. Right. Phil, would you like to anchor this part of the show? Because this is the moment where you might want to talk about Mary Queen of Scots and do the reviews first. Or you might want to jump straight into discussions about the Academy Awards. It's up to you.
Well, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. I am looking forward, Richard, to discussing and analyzing a little bit what we make of the Oscar nominations that were announced this week and what it says about the year in film. But I'm eager to hear your thoughts about these two films. I am an enormous fan of Stan and Ollie. It might very well make my list of the top 10 films of the year. And I found Mary Queen of Scots to be a not bad version of Mary Queen of Scots, though I sort of feel like we deserve better than not bad when it comes to that story.
Which I think, firstly, greetings, and so good to chat again after quite a hiatus. It's lovely following each other on Instagram and so on. I do agree that Mary Queen of Scots hasn't been the hit that I think was hoped for. I mean, I did think it was audacious in the sense that director Josie Rourke sees both queens as victims of brutal and powerful patriarchal societies. So when Elizabeth has Mary executed finally, she has, so to speak, metamorphosed mentally into a man. So this is the feminist message, but it is undoubtedly also sometimes unsubtle. I mean, Alex mentioned the beginning when Mary wears crimson when executed. Well, telling her story in flashback, brought up in France, widowed, returns to Scotland as romantic, capricious, and also a Catholic in a very dour and misogynistic Protestant environment. What one sees, and I've been to Holyrood House, and obviously this is one of the great stories with the obsession that we have with the Tudors, there's no question, there's a tremendous interest in it. The interest in Henry VIII, the interest in Elizabeth, the interest in Mary, Queen of Scots. She's a serious threat to Elizabeth, but Elizabeth has stirred up rebellion against her in Scotland on the advice of William Cecil, played by Guy Pearce. But we are expected to see them, so to speak, as sisters, is the way she sees Elizabeth. We do have this meeting between them. I have to say that apparently Donizetti had it in the opera, and we know Schiller had in Mary Stuart, which I have to say was a tremendous success here. The talk about drama on stage, well, I mean, this I really, really wish you could have seen. When you actually have Leicester at the beginning of this play, which was last year, and you have Leo Williams and Juliet Stevenson, and they approach him. Leicester's had an affair with both of them in the play, and he spins a coin to see which plays which. I mean, that is really, really theatrically dramatic, and I'd have thought it was very stressful.
It has influenced, even though I was not able to see it because of our conversation, it influenced activities, assignments that I would give my female actors in some of the classes that I teach, where they indeed would not know who was going to play what until I flipped that coin at the beginning. And for the right material, it's incredibly profound, especially at a time of where And this is something that the movie, I do think, touches on to some real effect, but at a time when we are challenging concepts of the patriarchy.
Oh, well, absolutely. I think that side of it. I mean, as for me, Saoirse Ronan dominates the film as Mary, and is very much its conscience and a symbol of oppressed women. Very headstrong, often unwise, an enchanting life force, a sincerity and intensity. But the real challenge is Margot Robbie's Elizabeth. And I think it's a very challenging role, because on the other hand, on one hand, you've got the manipulative side of her. But on the other hand, for example, she has to, the scene where the queens meet, where she actually removes her wig in deference to the beauty she sees before her. I mean, I thought that was ridiculous. It couldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. Climactically, she resembles this hideous gargoyle with, I thought, a legendary alabaster mask, which we always associate with her in all the paintings and so forth, resembling a form of penance for the regicide she's committed. I mean, an impressive performance, but it isn't all entirely convincing. And I'd also say that to portray both queens as victims, the questionable aspect of that, and I totally accept that it was dramatically worked, it partly works. I mean, Elizabeth had dedication and charisma, whatever her faults and frailties, and Mary did have some culpability for what she suffered, which is largely ignored. But I did like, I mean, we get, obviously, her disastrous marriages, Darnley, played by Jack Loudon, the murderous schemer, Lord Bothwell, played by Martin Compson, and the savage murder of her confidant, David Rizzio, played by Ismael Cruz Cordoba. It's dramatic in that sense. It's visually impressive. I think it's a provocative interpretation of events. I think it is a flawed version, and I think that, again, Elizabeth, as I say, is obviously going to be demonized, as she invariably is because of regicide. But you know, I mean, I'm glad I saw the film. I did think it raised questions, as you say, about today's patriarchy linked with that time. I mean, you have, obviously, both with The Favourite and this film, two films about royalty, and also, of course, all the top roles about women.
Well, and it, unfortunately, you know, right or wrong, we do judge, we can't help but judge works of art by context at the times that they're released. And it does Mary Queen of Scots no favor to be released in the shadow of The Favourite.
Telling me it doesn't.
I'm very curious about your thoughts about Stan and Ollie.
Well, I mean, I have a confession to make. I never found them funny. I mean, now that is simply me since childhood. I always thought that, I mean, they're one of the world's most famous comedy duos. I just didn't see what people absolutely bust a gut over. But directed by John S. Baird, a famous comedy duo, go on a tour of Britain and Ireland in the 50s, and also intend to get an adaptation of Robin Hood as some form of zany comedy made. And then we have flashbacks to the period that Stan refuses to...
Is it? Back projection. Cue me.
Sorry about that, gentlemen. We just had a bit of a standing on you people. Just bursting in there.
I thought that, yeah, it was just Stan refusing to renew his contract with Hal Roach, played, I thought, rather well by Danny Houston, as he feels it's mean, so Ollie is still tied to Roach and remains, and this causes a great deal of bitterness. But in the 1950s, Bernard Del Fonte, a very nice turn, I thought, as a villain, gives the tour very little publicity, and they play to empty houses. They plan for the film, but there's silence, which we later discover, with good reason for the producers. Well, Stan discovers it's aborted, and subsequently, when their wives join them, which I thought were very good performances, I have to say, Nina.
They're the heart of the movie, really, in no small way.
I thought excellent, and both, I mean, Shirley Henderson sort of very, very protective, and Nina Riatt, I mean, wonderfully domineering. I mean, the wives help to make the movie, but it does, of course, have two first-class performances by Steve Coogan as Laurel and John C. Reilly as Ollie. I mean, they are both, I thought, excellent, didn't you? I mean, I thought they were both marvelous.
The film has not received, I think, the critical acclaim that it deserved, at least on these shores. I can't speak to how it's been received there. The reviews have been positive, but it's been dismissed almost as this light comedy. And I think that this movie achieves something that, from my own personal professional experience, is incredibly difficult, maybe the most difficult trick as a storyteller, which is that it maintains this effortlessly charming appeal while at the same time embodying such genuine sorrow throughout it. And that combination is very, very difficult to maintain, but they maintain it so well that, like I said, it seems effortless.
I have to say that I think you speak with a great deal of empathy towards the duo. I presume you are amused or find them funny.
You know what? I will.
This is another fine mess you're getting me into, Richard. You know, I mean, for goodness sake.
I had not watched any of their work since I was maybe 8 years old. It truly was the characters as played by John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan. And I am an enormous admirer of Steve Coogan. And every time he astonishes me. And I was very moved by them. I just thought any movie that embodies sorrow, I think, is a movie that I'd doff my cap at. But when I combine it with a nonstop, charming humor to go along with that sorrow, I feel like it's a kind of movie that only, if you'll pardon the phrase, only the Brits could make.
Which I have to say, it has received very positive reviews here. I mean, that is undoubtedly the case. But I think if there's a problem with the movie, and I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and the performances made it for me. As I already expressed my own reservations about them, and it does colour one's attitude a bit, because there's obviously a lot of performance in it. But I do feel that a lot of it is very, very predictable. I mean, we see Ollie's heart attack during judging a beauty contest, one of the things they've got to do to drum up publicity. And, of course, they've already had a row about what happened the days in the 30s and so forth. It certainly strikes, I think, the right notes. I would absolutely agree with you there. It's no surprise, though, how it actually develops.
Clearly, Richard, what we need is an Abbott and Costello movie to actually kind of address the issues. Let's quickly take a quick straw poll in the studio, starting off with Eva. Will you be going to see Mary, Queen of Scots, or indeed Stan and Ollie, based on what Richard and Phil have been saying?
I would like to watch Mary, Queen of Scots, just because it does look quite interesting, and I do like...
David Tennant.
David Tennant, yes, of course. I like Saoirse Ronan as well. I think the last time I saw her in something was when she was in The Lovely Bones. So I'd like to see it again just to see her performance in it.
Abigail LeMay, will you be seeing either of those movies?
Well, I'll definitely be watching Mary, Queen of Scots. It's on my list. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I make my way over to the theatre, mm-hmm. I'll be seeing it.
Excellent. And how does the British cinema compare with the Canadian cinema?
I don't know. They all kind of blend together to me, Canadian, American, and British, because they're all speaking the English
like
language.
A sort of a holistic sort of thing.
Mystery in Quebec.
Yeah. Ben, yeah, what about yourself? Mary, Queen of Scots?
I'd like to see it, yes. It's on my sort of virtual to-do list.
Stan and Ollie?
Probably not, but I'm open to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Emma?
Yeah, I have the same opinion. I think really want to see Mary, Queen of Scots, but... don't think Stan and Ollie is my kind of film.
Stan and Ollie is a nostalgia, which, you know, the show business and how the relationship between them develops and so on. It is very, very well acted, but I wonder whether you have to have a certain empathy with the show with the shows they put on, with their films and so forth, to want to see the movie in the first place.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
that.
Kira? See, I would just say Mary, Queen of Scots, just because I'm interested in the era and stuff, and I've watched pretty much all the period dramas that's ever existed.
There we are. So it's a done deal from that point of view. We're going to take a momentary musical break now, a little hiatus, before we come back to Phil and Richard to talk about their views on the Academy Awards, etc., including the shocking, and I say again, quite literally shocking news and information that despite the fact that Julie Andrews was nominated and actually won an Academy Award for her portrayal of Mary Poppins, not a single word for Emily Blunt. Honestly, can you imagine that?
John, you're right. It's good to know you're bright. For intellect can wash away confusion. Georgie sees and Annabelle agrees. Most folderols an optical illusion. You three know it's true that 1 + 1 = 2. Yes, logic is the rock of our foundation. I suspect, and I'm never incorrect, that you're far too old to give in to imagination. No, not yet. Some people like to splash and play. Can you imagine that? And take a seaside holiday. Can you imagine that? Too much glee leaves rings around the brain. Take that joy and send it down the drain. Some people like to laugh at life and giggle through the day. They think the world's a brand new shiny toy. And if while dreaming in the clouds they fall and go kasplat, although they're down and bent in half, they brush right off and start to laugh. Can you imagine that?
Second thoughts, perhaps you're right. It makes no sense to take a bath this early.
Wait, I want to take a bath.
Oh, really? Up you go, and in you go.
Georgie, what happened? Will I be all right?
Well, it is just a bath after all, but then again, it's not my tub.
Shouldn't you go in after them?
Oh, no, I had my bath this morning, thank you.
Well, if you won't, I will!
Quite frankly, Phil, as I mean, Emily Blunt not nominated for Mary Poppins. I mean, the world's gone mad. I mean, this is what we talked about with Arthur Weingarten last night, and obviously Angela Lansbury and so on.
Do you want me to offer a serious explanation and analysis for that?
Go for it.
Perceived snub?
Okay.
Okay, I mean, I don't know if you're being serious or you're pulling my leg about the Mary Poppins thing, but she was being pushed for two different films, for Mary Poppins Returns, for Best Actress, and for A Quiet Place. And in A Quiet Place, where she is very much the lead, she was being pushed for supporting actress so as not to compete with Mary Poppins Returns. And it didn't work because people still went ahead and voted for her for A Quiet Place. And basically the idea is that the Emily Blunt vote came into opposition with another Emily Blunt vote. She canceled herself out.
Unbelievable.
I have to just make a comment here, and that is that even if that hadn't been the case, the Best Actress category, I mean, leaving aside my personal reservations about The Wife, which I thought a very poorly scripted film, I do agree Glenn Close is very good in it, you had to have Lady Gaga, Olivia Colman, Melissa McCarthy, and Yalitza Aparicio. I mean, where would you have, or how would you have fitted Emily Blunt in?
I do think it's Glenn Close. I do think that's the one. I mean, I think we're at the point where, you know what, we don't need to see actors in bad films nominated.
Well, I wish we didn't, but I felt The Wife, I mean, that Jonathan Pryce played a Nobel Prize winner who didn't know the names of his own characters, couldn't critique his the literary work of his son, and throws a Nobel Prize out of a medal out of the window. I mean, it really was poorly scripted, and I would, 45 years, I think, Glenn Close has adorned the screen. I'm a great admirer, but I just didn't feel that that was a good movie.
No.
Not to mention
no,
the fact
it's not.
And also
it's not.
When
and And Richard, and it's one of my pet peeves when people will acknowledge, well, the movie's not very good, but boy, that lead performance was excellent. Well, is it? I mean, it's a team sport, making movies. And if you're aware that what you're watching is a good performance, it means you're aware of the performance. It means the story is not working. And maybe one of the reasons it's not working is that the performance, as good as it may seem to be, isn't modulated well with the rest of the film. I'm not saying that's the case here, but I wish we would just stop. There's too much good work in good movies being done. We don't need to be giving nominations to people in movies that don't work.
And another thing, Phil, in an era where we've actually sort of had a hashtag of a whole variety of things, I'd like to add another one, hashtag Rocket Raccoon. Why hasn't Rocket Raccoon, a.k.a. Bradley Cooper, been named as best director?
I'm glad you asked me that one, because yeah. I can explain that one to you as well. I'm not justifying it, but I can explain it to you. The Academy is comprised mostly of actors. Its membership is about 75%, 80% actors. And once the nominations come out, all Academy members get to vote in all categories. But in creating the nominations, only the members within that branch get to vote to nominate people. And there is a genuine dislike within the director's branch that whenever an actor gets nominated for director, they inevitably win best director. And so the director's branch took it upon itself not to let that happen. They knew that if Bradley Cooper was nominated, Bradley Cooper would win, and Bradley Cooper does not deserve to win, so they did not nominate him.
Wow. But that is, by the way, I'm surprised that you mentioned 70 to 80%. I mean, I haven't seen the actual breakdown, but when in the Academy had 6,000 members, I think it was about 1,300 for the actors. I mean, I know the SAG Awards are the one of the harbingers of the Oscars, but I didn't think that the actors had quite the power of that, of a percentage of that sort. It does seem to me that the one outrageous thing, which I mean, I'm a great admirer of Cold War. I thought it was brilliant as Casablanca for the post-war and absolutely superb. To have Pavel Pavlikovsky nominated for Best Director, but not to have Cold War in the Best Picture list, and they could also have had Can You Ever Forgive Me in the Best Picture list, I think. I thought that was extraordinary, but to cut Bradley Cooper out for that reason is really, it's nothing to do with merit.
Okay, Richard, just hold it there.
It is interesting. They do nominate, as you point out, Paul Polakowski for Cold War. It's hard to argue with that. It reminds me when, I'm going back many years, none of the co-presenters in the studio would remember this, but when there was such outrage over Steven Spielberg not being nominated for A Color Purple, and even then I said, well, okay, I understand you're upset, but Akira Kurosawa got nominated instead. That's all right.
Absolutely superb.
As Ben has just pointed out, it is National Compliment Day, so we'll compliment Richard and Phil for doing some wonderful loquaciousness as far as things are concerned. As you also pointed out, Ben, it's National Peanut Butter Day as well.
I know, it's like every day's a national
Peanut Butter Day.
But it's National Phil and Richard Day.
I think
it happens every year, doesn't it?
That will be happening, very certainly. But we follow this through from a discussion we had with Arthur Weinberg last night. So, Emma, the Academy Awards, would you be watching the thing, or is it just a case of, frankly, you're not interested?
Oh, no, I'll be watching it.
You will be watching it, okay. And Kira?
I'll be watching it on and off, but I hope that Bohemian Rhapsody get Best Picture.
Okay. Right then, Ben, would you like to put... Actually, we'll do it between yourself and Abigail, actually, and probably Eva as well. Would you like to...
So there's two questions between three people.
That'll be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
We'll split it somehow.
Well, three, two... Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Phil, please?
Okay, so Phil, have you had an interesting and probably debatable... telephonic link
it's
with us today.
With Phil. Maybe it is.
It is.
Isn't, you know.
It's ending too soon.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, far too soon.
I think you just started the conversation. We'll have to join you again next week.
We've got many more things to talk about.
Abigail, next question for Phil is?
Will you be joining us again?
There's no way to contact the Siren Studios and just add an extra hour to the show this week?
I wish we could, Phil. I really have so enjoyed the chat and link up.
Well, let's make sure that we speak again next week, Richard.
Yes, no, that would be fabulous.
I think we've managed to identify that in more ways than one, really, which is great. So Richard Fitzwilliams and Phil Leonis will be back with us, as far as we can tell. We'll also be speaking to Ian Lennox up next. Time for Cold Old London.
Don't know why we first met in cold old London down by
the... Well said, Ben. We didn't actually ask Richard Fitzwilliams those last two questions, so off you go, quickly, over Rod Stewart.
Richard, have you enjoyed your 10 or 15 length of stay on the show?
Well, I've enjoyed it enormously, and I'm looking forward to continuing our discussion on the Oscars. We haven't mentioned Roma yet. Next week with Phil.
To a long conversation next week, then. And we'll be joining us again next week to chat with Phil and everyone else.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Look forward to seeing you.
That gave me butterflies. Life's a treasure, but love's so unkind. So please be careful with this heart of mine. Oh, that I just let you go. What a fool I was, what a damn fool I was, so blind I couldn't see. Girls are getting younger. Maybe it's too late for me. I still wonder where you are each night, staring at the moonlight with a new man by side. You were beautiful in every human way. Oh, so why did I let you go? Cold old London, cold old.
Cold old London, not cold old Lennox, because he's not really old. He might be a bit cold, though. How are you, Ian Lennox, in Tyneside?
I'm afraid I am cold, and I'm very old, actually.
Yeah. So obviously I need to have contact Rod Stewart and actually make sure he actually does cold old Lennox next. Line from that. Okay, in the studio, five folk, Ian, and it's up to you to decide who you wish to speak to. Of course, we have the fabulous Ben from Brighton.
Yes, good morning, Ian.
Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Not so bad, you?
Not so bad, yes.
Good.
Better football results than...
Plenty to go through.
I'm sure you'd be just pleased that Mike Ashley is now taking over HMV as well, which is great. You know,
maybe Patisserie Valerie, who knows?
Every particular store falls
into Mike. Every store in administration
will be run by Michael Ashley, which is great. I mean,
so you think it won't be the Sports Direct Stadium, it could be the Sports Direct HMV Patisserie Valerie Stadium.
I think that would be a perfect sort of solution for all Newcastle United fans. In this studio, of course, Emma Street also with us.
Yes, good morning.
Emma, are you
worried? Hello, Emma.
Are you worried about Chelsea Tottenham this evening?
I am slightly worried, Tottenham.
Why?
Going through a very good bit at the moment. But I'm still on Spurs' side, obviously.
You're still on, yeah.
And Chelsea are struggling as well, so, you know. It'll be an interesting game, though, I think it'll be a good watch, I'll be watching it.
Either way, the winner will be playing the Conquerors of Button.
That's why my dad supports Man City, you see.
Very sensible father.
The hope is that if Spurs go through...
No, not very sensible father.
Yes. Excellent. I mean, and a little shout-out for your chauffeur father this morning. Would you actually give him a name check?
Yeah. He's not at work today, actually. He's off today. He's not very well. He might be listening. Yeah.
I do share his pain, actually, in many ways, obviously, as a City fan, because this week, tragically, we lost 2-0 in the Checker Trade Van Trophy. So, unfortunately, the quarterfinal, City cannot win 5 trophies this year.
To who?
To Sunderland.
And what division are they in?
Sunderland.
Sunderland.
Last I heard, they were in Division 2, I think.
Yes. No, 1, actually.
On Netflix.
Oh, well, that's all right. Then you only lost 2-0. There's Division 1 team.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so it was the reserves.
Did you have a reserve team out?
Yes. Under 21s.
I bet that cost them about $21 billion to fund the squad as
Thank
well.
Thank you, Ben. Okay.
Yes.
We also have, from Canada, of course, this time in 2019, replete with broken hand as well. Wonderful. Abigail LeMay.
Hello.
Hello.
And Eva MacDonald.
Hello. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
And Kira Olsbrook.
Good morning, Ian. Hello, Kira.
So who do you wish to speak to, Ian? You've got a few moments. You need to decide. Is it going to be Abigail, Kira, Becky, Emma, or Ben?
I'll pick Becky. Because Ben's supports Brighton.
And strange enough,
we don't have a Becky. You mentioned a Becky.
We don't have a Becky in the studio. That was, again...
That was poor form,
Alex. It was indeed. It just goes to show...
Try again.
Okay. Kira, Emma, Ben, Eva, or Abigail?
Sorry, did you say I can't pick Becky?
No, because you're not here.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It's radio, you see. Suddenly
turn around. I'll have Abigail then.
There you go. Abigail,
hello.
Step up to the plate.
Hi.
Ian, the floor is yours. Chat away.
Right, Abby. Oh, Abigail. Are you a football fan?
It translates actually as God's joy, Abigail.
Breath of God, God's joy.
That's from the original Hebrew. If you actually go back in the details of that, Abigail.
I'll let my parents know if that's what that means.
So you should. Sorry, Ian. Carry on.
Yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, are you a football fan?
Like football, like soccer, or football, like football?
Mm. Oh dear! Perfectly valid
question. You know, is it soccer? Is it football?
Which part of America do you come from?
I'm not from America. I'm definitely from Canada. I'm just pulling your.
Oh, Canada, right? Okay. Well, I've got a sister who lives out in Canada.
Oh, nice. Whereabouts?
In Edmonton.
Oh wow, that's the gotta be bit. Really cold right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They laugh at us in the winter. I mean,
they do. Well,
30, 40 below sometimes.
Do you laugh at us, Abigail? Is it a case of I laugh at you British people in your winter?
Not really. I laugh when I'm over here because all of my friends are stuck in the minus 20 degree weather and I'm here complaining that it's icy out.
It's one degree centigrade.
I went to a pub last night and one of my friends works on the oil rigs as an electrician. And the North Sea, and he'd just come back from a 3-week stint on the rigs. And he was wearing a T-shirt, he thought it was summer.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, they can only go up for so long.
Yeah, that's
cool. And then they've got to come back in, and they've got all the sorts of special clothing and everything. And I think, you can imagine, because the Canadian coal is dry coal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the North Sea coal, I imagine, is very wet coal. Yeah. There's a lot of water about.
Yes.
And, God, I don't know about you, wife. I hate the winters now as I got older.
Yeah.
You don't hate the winters, Ian. I mean, embrace and enjoy the winters from that point.
No, I don't. I hate them.
Oh,
dear. I myself for what? I'm defeated about the winter.
Okay. I mean, let's go and start. Emma, do you hate the winters?
No, I'm a big fan of the winters. I like an excuse to stay inside and keep warm.
Eva, I know you prefer the warm weather, but do you hate winter?
Well, I'm more of a summer fan.
Right.
So I kind of struggle with the winter, really, because
I don't mind snow, but it's the rain and the slush and things I can't stand.
Clearly, the other thing we forgot to mention with Richard Fitzwilliams, but I will run past Ian Lennox, is it's nice to see that the Brexit news was knocked off the front page by, of course, the 97-year-old driver in Norfolk that actually had a little bit of an incident and then got his Range Rover back the next day. Ian, 97, do you think he was perhaps a little bit too mature to actually be in charge of a Range Rover?
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Short answer is. Yeah. I think he just drives around the state normally, doesn't he? But he seems to come out onto a main road.
Got lost, maybe. Sat-nav. That's what it was. Sat-nav.
Yeah. I wonder if Richard would be actually sort of accessing the DNA data as well from that point of view. Maybe. Just to clone another Prince Philip, which would be wonderful.
I think he still rides a horse and carriage as well, you know.
No, he gave that a few. I used to see him actually do the carriage trials up at one of the shows in Cumbria. But he retired from the horse and carriage riding about 8 or 9 years ago.
Right, so he's mere 80s then.
Exactly.
Yeah, apparently he was very, very good at it.
He was indeed. Kira, the winter. Do you like the winter?
Yes and no, really. I mean, it's...
Well, you've got a Scottish background as well.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You could say you kind of, the Scottish part loves it, the part that's based in Derbyshire, less so.
See, when you live in further down south, so in Derbyshire, it's not really down south, but compared to Scotland.
Scotland, it is down south.
Yeah.
You don't know what down south is yet.
Brighton is way down south. Brighton is
you
deep
fall off the edge if you come with mine.
But, what was I saying? I don't know what I was saying now.
Yes and no, that's what you said.
Yeah, that was it. Because when you're in Scotland and you get absolutely snowed in, it's like, it is genuinely like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. We need to go into hibernation mode. Mm. But then when it's down here and we have a little bit of snow, it's like...
It's the end of the world.
It is the end of the world and there's barely anything. It's like the other night when it was snowing. But no, I hate the black ice.
There we are.
Yes.
Quite messy. Yeah. Messy about that. Communications in Society. She hates the black ice. I might use that as a theme in the seminar later on.
I was very lucky.
ACDC song, isn't it?
Sorry, Ian. We talked across you there. What were you saying about black ice?
I was very lucky. I was going to a football match a couple of years ago. I went over on black ice and my head missed the curb by about 6 inches. Mm. And the frightening thing about black ice is it's so quick. It happens so quickly. My feet just ran up above my head and woof, I was out. But fortunately, some people came to help me.
Well, the important thing is you're still part of the midweek drive. That's the important thing. And whilst we're talking about various...
I lay there, Alex, that was the first thought that came to my head.
Exactly. Have you ever broken any bones, Ian?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
So which ones? Because we were having a little pee. I mean, thanks to Abigail, obviously, who led us into this, having broken her hand earlier.
I broke my left fist boxing.
Right.
On a punch ball.
Right.
I lost a punch ball. I hit the rattle bit of a punch ball and broke my... I had a broken hand when I was attacked in the street in Newcastle when I was a young bloke.
See, these are things not to go to Newcastle for, obviously.
I think that's it, really. I lost some teeth playing football.
Mm-hmm.
At least
we've again sort of kept us up to date with respect to that. We're going to be speaking to Craig Bennett, Chief Executive Officer of Friends of the Earth, immediately after the news, together with Lou Bevin, Countryside Correspondent. And it falls now to Kira to put those last two questions to you, Ian Lennox. Off you go, please, Kira.
Hello, Ian. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have, yes. Thank you very much.
And will you be hoping to join us again soon?
I do hope so, yes.
Good.
The key word, really, be hoping to join us again soon, because, you know, we'd like to...
You don't have to do,
sometimes it's hope, a little close, just a fire, a bit away from despair and so on. Who knows what could be happening with respect to that. I will also find out what William Sitwell has been getting up to as well. It's amazing. It's all to do with pigs, apparently, this week. I know. This is amazing. Ian Lennox, we salute you. Take care. Speak in about 168 hours from now and try not to break any bones in betwixt times. Bandit and Baby on Siren Radio. It's just coming around to 1 minute. That's 1 minute to 9 a.m. Very exciting in the studio. We have the amazing Ben Lewis.
Morning.
And Abigail.
Hi.
And Eva.
Good morning.
And Emma.
Good morning.
And Kira.
Hi.
Hey, exactly. And Lou Bevins with us as well. Lou, how's life in Doncaster?
Nice and cold.
Nice. We're going to hear from your own perspective as countryside correspondent and all-round wonderful soul to do with Rap Matters Rural about how you think Brexit and such like might be impacting all sorts of things. By the way, do you remember Ben Lewis? You once spent some time with him at the Lincolnshire Show.
I do indeed.
See? Yay. You see? Exactly me. Ben was doubtful where you say he won't remember me.
It was 2 years ago now.
That's right.
Instant recollection. Straight in there. No messing about it. Lou will be back with us after the news from the Sky News Centre when we've got a whole other hour of great good stuff coming up on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Siren Radio. Siren Radio. And the weather today, highs of 5 degrees centigrade, lows of 1 degree centigrade, and it's going to be a day of light cloud with a gentle breeze. So, compares fairly well with Canada, I would have thought, really, Abigail, in terms of...
Yeah, almost.
Almost. Almost. Canada equivalent, about minus 20?
They're both cold.
Mm.
Right.
Awesome. They're both cold, though. That's the key thing. You know, it's minus 20, one, they're both cold. That's the important thing. So, Lou, already we're finding that Friends of the Earth have actually put a petition together to try and ensure that the UK government, yes, we do have one, apparently, will be made aware of the fact that a no-deal Brexit could have a major dramatic effect on an environment with species such as the great cormorant, the stag beetle, the red kite all suffering, and indeed all major UK cities effectively becoming problematised with respect to sewage, etc. Brighton Beach, for instance, no-deal Brexit will leave the United Kingdom without the environmental rules needed, with nobody to enforce them, and without adequate environmental protections. Brighton Beach, Ben, could return to its previous sewage and pollution-filled state.
I don't think... Personally, I don't think that would happen, but I don't think they'd let it happen. Mm-hmm. But there's always possibilities. Nothing wrong with it out.
Lou, what are your thoughts on somebody who will be making your way over to Holland in a few moments for possibly the last time you'll have that joy of being able to import some of those wonderful rabbits from the Netherlands to the British continent?
Yeah, well, it, came home to us, we've been getting lots of letters lately from Mr. Miliband. Helen put a piece online back in late October warning people in the old days, pre-pet passports, you needed a blood test against rabies with a three-month clean period, which meant if you were going to be travelling on or around the dreaded 29th, and we lost our current status and we had to go back to the old ways, you would have needed to have produced this certificate. And I think Mr. Miliband picked up on it, and they've been toing and froing with letters. Indeed, as you mentioned, I'm going over to Antwerp on the 3rd to bring in a team of breeding animals, just in case on the 29th we go back to the old quarantine system. I mean, it had cost me probably £250,000 to set up the kind of quarantine that I used to have, which is totally a non-runner.
Interesting thoughts. Eva, are you concerned about a no-deal Brexit?
A little bit. I mean, because obviously with the government, they've kind of come to that decision. There's still a lot that needs to be discussed, really, and it's kind of been left on a hanger, I'm kind of viewing it.
Well, in a few minutes or so, we'll be listening to Craig Bennett, an interview we did a day or so ago, to talk about Friends of the Earth's position on this. But let's continue the whole thing through. Kira, no deal Brexit is a case of words. Doesn't matter. It doesn't affect me. I'm half Scottish, so I'm going to move back to Scotland and make sure the border comes
out. Yeah, I'm going to move up there and become independent. No, I'm joking. I don't know, because, I mean, I'm not really up to date with the whole political side and things.
Right. Neither the government, I would say.
I mean, I guess we've just got to wait and see, to be honest, but...
Emma?
I can't keep up with it. I feel like I read it one day and then the next day it's changed and I'm just ignoring it for now and waiting for it to settle.
Fingers in the ear and say, la-la-la-la-la-la. Yeah. Abigail, as somebody from Canada, you don't care, presumably.
No, I do care. I do. I'm actually really stressed out about it. Because if I ever want to come back... going to be way different. I just don't understand why anybody would want to separate themselves. Like, why is it so important that we're not up? Well, I'm not really part of the we, but for the sake of this, would we want to be separate from the rest of Europe? I can't understand.
Well, there we have it, you see. And many astronauts would actually say, first day in space, you actually start pointing to your country, then you start pointing to your continent, then you realise it's just one world. Ben, any thoughts for yourself?
I think there's always a certain degree of uncertainty. But I think whether there'd be a deal or no deal, I think there will always be uncertainty. I don't like it when economists and various folk predict certain things, but don't actually know themselves what the outcome would be. They're going by data as such, which didn't prove very well when the referendum did happen, because they predicted the pound would fall through the floor as soon as it went to leave votes. But personally, I'm not afraid of a no deal referendum. Brexit.
No deal referendum.
I know a no deal Brexit, but. I think what's quite frustrating is it's a very dismantled parliament at the minute, and one that doesn't really unify in either direction. I feel like it's very, I feel like we're in tough times and there's a lot of division.
Unless you've actually been under a rock for the last few months, clearly the B word, followed by REXIT, is something which is clearly impacting in a whole variety of folk. And whether you actually want to sort of say, no, we can't take it anymore. It's extraordinary to find that we seem to be faced with a whole range of impacts on our living habits, our conditions and so on. And even nature sites and species in the United Kingdom could be at risk from a no-deal Brexit. Now, to talk about this and to really explain how, whether you're in Cannock Chase, Norfolk, Brighton Beach, or indeed any of the major UK cities, you need to be very concerned about this. We're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Friends of the Earth, the awesome Craig Bennett. How are you, Craig?
Hello, good morning. How are you doing?
Excellent. Now, I mean, this really caught me completely on the hop in terms of the kind of areas that could be impacted if we actually have a no-deal Brexit.
Well, that's been a big part of the problem, hasn't it, about the whole debate and discussion that has gone on over the last 2 years, is there hasn't been nearly enough discussion and debate about the environment and what Brexit will mean for the environment. And I think although we've seen lots of nice promises by Theresa May and Michael Gove to try and maintain EU laws and regulations as we Brexit and put them into UK law, the fact is they haven't done that job completely yet. They've done some, but there's still an awful lot to do. We haven't got the enforcement in place, and we've now run out of time. And I think they were assuming that if Theresa May's deal had gone through, there would then be this transition period and there would be a long amount of time to try and get this sorted. But if we have a no-deal Brexit and a chaotic one at that, then we won't have the environmental laws in place to protect the environment. We won't have the enforcement in place. And I think environment would get pushed even lower down the list of political priorities. So we're, at Friends of the Earth, we're really concerned about it.
There's an awful lot of lip service played by politicians to things like the environment and so on. And do you sometimes get frustrated that actually is just that lip service, that it's cosmetic, and then actually when push comes to shove, actually we might be faced, you know, in the third decade of the 21st century with a kind of nihilistic scenario. People actually say, well, what the hey, if Norfolk is actually sort of troubled by damages to its local wildlife, do we really care?
Yeah, well, obviously, we get very frustrated about it, Friends of the Earth, and we try and do something about it. And the problem is the environment has been in decline over the last few years. We've seen some improvements in some areas. I mean, the beaches in Lincolnshire and so on are cleaner now than they used to be because of European environmental laws. And we have seen some recovery of some species and protection of some habitats. But overall, the environment is still getting worse, and we need to turn that around. So it's not as if the laws we've got now under the EU are necessarily good enough anyway. We're not saying that. But the problem is there will be huge gaps if we leave with a no-deal Brexit at the end of March. And exactly as you said, where we get promises from politicians of all colours, really, around the environment, but often those promises aren't delivered on. I mean, the government's made promises around tackling air pollution, but the fact is they're currently failing to do even what's legally required of them now. They made even promises about things like getting rid of disposable coffee cups. Remember that one? And that hasn't materialised because in the end they bended to industry pressure. So promises are not good enough. And Michael Gove has made promises about a new Environment Act. It all sounds very good and so on. But it's a very long way off going through Parliament at the moment. And if we have no deal, a chaotic no deal Brexit, it will probably get pushed even further back. So I think there's really clear evidence and reasons to be concerned about this. And that's why Friends of the Earth is saying, whether you voted leave or remain, the one thing that unites us all is we don't want the environment to get worse. And surely it's common sense we need to make sure these protections are in place before we leave. And if that means delaying Article 50, if that means pausing the Brexit process to get it right, so be it. Because with the environment, if you get it wrong once, the environment gets trashed and it's very hard to fix it.
You've launched a petition, or Friends of the Earth has actually launched a petition to lobby the UK government. Is there a way in which our listeners can actually say, OK, at least we can sign up online and actually say, fine, this is serious, this is important, we want to acknowledge that we have a future in terms of the environment?
Absolutely. If you go to the Friends of the Earth website, you'll find lots of information there about the environment and Brexit, and also a link to our petition, which has already got tens of thousands of people already signed up to it. And again, this should appeal to people whether they voted leave or remain. We're trying to unite people here behind one common message. Don't let the environment suffer as we Brexit. That's really important. And take chaotic no deal off the table and delay the process if you need to. Let's just get it right before this happens.
There really seems to be no part of the United Kingdom which would be unaffected by this. I mean, just looking at the kind of areas here, London, Suffolk, Essex, Norfolk, Cambridge, Brighton, Kent, Hampshire, Gloucestershire, Birmingham, the East Midlands and so on. This is important. And again, do you sometimes get frustrated at the fact that, you know, look, listen now, the canary is in the coal mine. It's falling off its perch. We need to do something now.
Enormously frustrated about it. But the thing that inspires me is right up and down the country, we have Friends of the Earth local groups that are campaigning at a local level to protect their local wildlife sites, to improve the environment, to try and tackle air pollution at the local level. And things would be much worse if we didn't have Friends of the Earth local groups campaigning on that. And I think us raising this alarm today, saying that a chaotic no deal will cause real problems, is what is absolutely we're duty bound to do today, and try and unite people around that and say, if you care about the environment, take no deal off the table, or at least delay the process, pause the process to get it right, protect the environment before we leave. And it does affect, you're right, it affects every part of the country. I mean, every part of the country has amazing wildlife sites that are currently protected by EU law, and where if we have a chaotic no deal, the enforcement won't be in place to make sure that's upheld. But it also affects our kitchen cupboards, can you believe? You know, in open up your kitchen cupboard and there's lots of household consumer products in there, and chemicals where the worst chemicals, the most dangerous chemicals, have been banned by EU law. And actually there's no provision at the moment to make sure those bans are in place as we leave under no-deal Brexit. And more to the point, you can imagine, no-deal Brexit, suddenly the political debate will be, how can we get a quick and dirty trade deal with Donald Trump? And we know he wants to try and insist on getting rid of a lot of environmental laws to get that trade deal. That's absolutely where he's coming from. So it affects our kitchen cupboards, it affects the air we breathe, it affects the wildlife sites that we know and love and like to walk in with our children and our dogs and so on. So it affects every bit of life. We've just got to put the environment first here.
As we said, go online to acts.friendsoftheearth.uk/act/no-deal. And you can sign up for that. At the very least, I think it's essential that we raise the sort of issue, because otherwise, what's the point of a democracy, to be absolutely honest? Craig Bennett, Chief Executive Officer of Friends of the Earth, many thanks indeed. And hopefully we'll speak again soon, and maybe the prognosis might just get a little bit brighter.
Thank you. Let's talk again soon.
Lou Bevin, you've been listening to that. Are you worried? Is it a case of, what the hey, we've been there before? What's the view from Doncaster?
No, to back up your previous speaker there, Mr. Gove is going around the country saying that farmers can help us. We need more butterflies and buttercups. Right, that's great for the 56, 58 million of you that are not farmers, but that is terrible for the 2 million that are, because the two things you don't want, it sounds very nice, buttercups and butterflies, they're the two things the farmers do not want. He's trying to pay the premiums for being good people instead of paying premiums for producing good food.
Let's do a round robin. Ben, you're not impressed with the press release that you've seen from Friends of the Earth and so on?
Not with that particular... I understand Lou's point there, and I completely agree with him there. However, with what was announced on this press release, I think a lot of it was... It's quite biased, if I'm honest. I think the problem is... The cities that they've listed, a lot of them are, you know, beach coasts anyway, and they tend to use the same point about the sewage. And for example, they say about no deal Brexit in Brighton, could return to their previous sewage and pollution-filled state. But Caroline Lucas, the MP for Brighton, I don't think, as a member of Green Party, would let that happen.
She might just give up.
Well, this is the thing. And I completely understand there's obviously... You know, fors and against on both sides, and I know no deal Brexit could lead to certain issues, obviously, with EU laws in place.
A dumping
originally.
Ground for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I don't think that's probably fair to say, but you know, I understand what he's trying to put across. I don't think it's fair to say, really. But
okay,
generally, yeah.
Kira, thoughts?
To be honest,
speechless.
I just think the whole entire Brexit idea is just pathetic, really. I don't think it should have happened.
Did you vote?
No, because I wasn't 18 at the time. But
so really the decision was made and you're going to have to live with the consequences.
I would have chosen to leave personally. But
Emma?
Yeah, I didn't get to vote. I was two months away from being able to vote. So, but yeah, I didn't really like the way that this was like set out. I think it would have been better to focus on the positives that obviously the EU brings to the farms and things like that, and kind of focus on that. I think because I don't like the what ifs and the coulds and
the maybes like and the shoulds and stuff like that. Eva.
Well, reading this press release, we just read it, and like Ben was saying, it's a lot of could and should and would, and it seems to me like a lot of propaganda. That it's not. This press release in particular is not backed up with any actual facts. And I think, you know, it's all a bit of a big worry, really, because a lot of people are seeing it on the negative side. And I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, But a lot of people are looking at it from the negative way and they're saying, oh, this can happen, that can happen. But there's never been any positive or other way of looking at, at it as well.
And Abigail? I mean, again, it's a case of see you and what be you. I'm back to Canada in a few months' time.
I'm still kind of going to stick with my original thought. I just don't understand why it's so important that everybody has to be separated in their own individual country. I feel like the world just works best when we're all kind of working with each
moving
other.
Moving together. Lou, I mean, you've heard, again, some of the views there of the next generation. Again, any comments or thoughts you'd like to raise from your own perspective? Because obviously you've got a young daughter who's doing all sorts of wonderful ACE things at Cambridge and such like. So first class honours, I think she graduated with.
Yeah, I feel like going back, instead of looking forward, it makes me think back to the great George W. Bush with the unknown unknown. I think that's what we're facing, an unknown. We're not being, I mean, we haven't, the government haven't given us any figures breaking things down. Why we're paying X money to pay the pensions of all these bureaucrats in Brussels in the future. How much are we charging them for allowing use of GCHQ, MI5 and MI6, which we know are brilliant agencies, which Europe will rely on because they haven't got anything as good in Europe for information regarding terrorism, etc. Why aren't the... Does the government not know what Mrs. May's magic plan is? Because I certainly don't, and I'm an old man.
Message is taken and received. Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to Lou, or indeed have a final summing up?
No, I completely agree with you, Lou. And I think it's all a bit of a shambles, really, in general. I think it's been poorly handled. I don't think...
So in keeping with British traditions, though?
Yes. You know, they've made a fine mess of it. But, you know, hopefully there's some good news to come in whatever form. Hopefully we hear less of the B word, but I can't see that coming, really. Nevertheless, Lou, have you enjoyed your 10-foot length for us today on the show?
As always.
Wonderful. And we'll be joining us again sometime soon, hopefully.
I hope so, yeah.
We'll be right back.
suppose in the wonderful world of life, there is a certain irony in before you actually pass on the next level, Dolores Cranberry having a song called All Over Now. Ah, well, off she goes. And on National Compliment Day, we say award-winning film critic, well, film critic to be, food critic, as is, and general all-round gastronomic connoisseur, writer extraordinaire, William Sitwell. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for the new job. I'm very excited.
I think so. Yeah.
I like watching telly, I would say. The old movie. I'm very happy to be Siren FM's new film critic.
I think actually yourself, Phil Dearness, and Richard Fitzwilliams would be the dream team in so many ways.
It would
be awesome.
Do you have a cinema in Lincoln?
Nice line. I see what you did there. Exactly. Yeah. Electricity and running water as well. It's fantastic. It's great. So it's a gathering of five folk in the studio. We've got Eva McDonald back with us.
Hello. Good morning, William.
Good morning.
We have from Canada, Abigail LeMay. How are you, Abigail?
Good. How are you?
Splendid. And William as well, no doubt. She's great stuff. Ben Lewis, of course.
Morning, William.
Good morning.
And Emma Street.
Good morning.
And Kira.
Good morning, William.
There we are.
We could just keep saying good morning and that'd be a good spot.
We could. What is it about a pig that captures the interest of so many of us? Perhaps it's because few animals have that unique combination of charm and, well, flavour. William, you've gone majorly into the pig at Combs in the third in the weekly instalment of your wonderful critical aspects in the Telegraph magazine. I won't even start on the hipster cheese, but that was genius as well. I gather a 3-star rating, though not the best experience for the chosen restaurant.
Yeah, well, they need to improve their meat. Mm. I don't want to throw any more past manure over them. I've written 800 words, so
exactly, and that's why we haven't mentioned them on air, obviously, because it's just the look back at the whole thing. But I noticed in terms of your Facebook scenario, we have again another thing which could conceivably actually launch another vegan challenge. I thought with the words "take octopus off the menu," what utter cretinous stupidity!
Well, did you see this story about the head of, I think it's Somerville College in Oxford? She demanded that octopus was removed from the menu because it might upset some of the underprivileged students.
Hmm. Let's actually just, because obviously we've got five students in the studio now, so it's ideally positioned to do a straw poll for the Lincoln routine. Abigail, octopus, would you be upset if, I don't think it is actually offered by the catering facilities here at Lincoln, but you know, would you sort of think this is there? What's your thought about octopus?
I'm not really a big seafood fan. I would never order octopus, but I think if I saw it offered, I don't think I'd get upset. I'd just say, oh, they have octopus. That's it.
They have octopus. So really, no major impact from that. Ben?
I think it's a bit daft, isn't it, really? I mean, you could go to a restaurant and say there's something you don't like and kick up a fuss and hope they take it off the menu. I mean, really, if you don't like it, don't pick it. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean other people do.
Mm-hmm. I'm particularly interested by the comment from Annunciata Rees-Mogg, possibly related to the great Rees-Mogg, perhaps. I only discovered octopus in my 20s, and now it is one of my life's greatest occasional pleasures.
Yeah, I think it was on the menu, Ben, so it was at a fresher dinner, so there wasn't a choice, or maybe there was a veggie choice, so I think that was... I think the more that... one needs to be open-minded, octopus is a pretty humble, modest dish. You know, when you see it hanging, drying up on the beaches, you know, on the harbour sides of Greece and so on, I think when it's cooked well, it's a wonderful dish, just because it gives some people the creeps, and they might understand it. I think it's a good reason, you know, and the default chicken option is gloomy. Mm. Of course, you could always have a vegan black pudding, I expect.
Mm. It's a traditional delicacy in parts of the world, though, octopus. I think it's certainly a dish people need to openly try. It's one of those dishes, you know, unless you know for certain you don't like it, at least give it a try.
Give it a try. Open your mind.
Emma, octopus.
I haven't tried it as of yet, but I think, you know, it's not something I'd try over here. I think you'd have to go abroad. And,
so you eat it, but not in England?
No, not in England.
Get them in Lincoln.
Yeah. Fishing in the Brayford pool for octopus, it's not going to happen, really. Kira?
I've actually tried octopus. I mean, it was disguised over loads of hot kind of curry sauce when I was in Cyprus, but personally I think it's not exactly my cup of tea. It's quite disgusting and squidgy and ugh. But
squidgy.
it's like a snail when you bite it. I don't know, but I'm not really. I mean, if it goes off the menu, it goes off the menu. It doesn't really. Same. I don't think it really concerns the younger generation, to be honest.
So an easygoing thing about Eva.
I think it is a bit strange to if you don't like octopus to take it off a menu completely. I think that's a bit far-fetched. But I have tried octopus. I've been abroad quite a few times, and it's always been on the menus and stuff there. And is it
squidgy?
It is squidgy, and it does look off-putting, but it's got quite a 50-50 flavour, I think.
A 50-50 flavour?
Well, I think it's like a Marmite thing. Oh. I think it's because of its texture and the way that it looks, it puts people off. But there's potential to like it. And I did like the flavour of it quite a bit. I think it depends what you put it with. I wouldn't say on its own, but if you had it with something, I think it'd be quite nice.
When we get to the stage of actually having podcasts of William Sidwell's Telegraph correspondence, I think we actually have to have the ident wade in, as they actually often say with respect to the horse racing and such like, because William weighs in on the rise of hipster cheese this week.
I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. I shall quote from the actual piece, because it's rather like sort of a quoting from the Bible here. We are becoming an increasingly cheesy nation, with more and more varieties, many of them British-made, gracing our tables. But I'm thankful for a survey by Arla that shows we remain grounded, listing cheddar as our most popular wedge. Indeed, our local grocer, Mr. Mumford, does he have any sons? Oh, right. Drives a van.
Hang on. I tell you, he does have sons. But they don't work in the butcher's trade. But a friend of mine has a recording studio and actually hosted Mumford & Sons for one of their albums. And there was a great moment when the Mumford & Sons van drove up, and Mumford & Sons came out of the studio, and they bought some of Mumford & Sons sausages. And he's noted for his chipolatas. So there you go.
And did the butcher buy the album?
He was running a bit late, and they rang it. Sorry, I'm going to make a terrible joke about I Will Wait, but it's...
It does work, and clearly. Yeah. But it's all coming together. That's the important thing, Abigail. As you say, it's a unique line from that. Abigail, any questions you'd like to put to William Sidwell about life, the universe, octopus, or indeed anything?
Well, I'm still confused about what exactly hipster cheese means. What is a hipster cheese? Because I like Havarti cheese. That's my favorite cheese. Is that a hipster cheese?
Oh, it's halloumi. Halloumi might be.
I have no idea. I don't know what Alex is talking about, but I'm assuming hipster cheese is probably vegan, in which case it's not cheese.
Because vegan,
you probably squeeze the juice out of an almond.
Cheese.
Isn't that how vegans make cheese?
I guess you're right.
They're around squeezing nuts.
Yes. Dairy alternatives are kind of the new thing, which I'm pretty pleased with.
I don't know how many nuts do you have to squeeze in order to make cheese.
It's a very philosophical question, William, for this time.
4,000, probably. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, I mean, it is National Peanut Butter Day, isn't it?
It is National Peanut Butter Day.
There we go. We brought it up.
I mean, will you be celebrating in the Sitwell household by actually bringing your peanut butter out and actually saying, congratulations, everybody, it is just before Burns Night, National Peanut Butter Day.
I actually hate peanut butter.
Oh, yes.
But I started this morning with the Breakfast of Champions with some... a little bit of toast with some Marmite on it, a fried egg, and 3 pieces of black pudding.
That's the most random breakfast I've ever heard.
That's more random than me. I don't have random breakfasts.
That's a student breakfast.
I know.
You've opened up so many...
breakfast, a little bit of Marmite on toast with an egg on top. Adds a certain piquancy to it. It's a really nice way of adding a little bit of seasoning.
Didn't fancy some octopus with that?
You know what? I would have had a little bit of octopus on the side. It was nicely charred, soft. It's cooked well. Of course, it's lovely. If it's cooked bad, it's terrible.
And that can be said so much about so many things.
So many things.
Ben, you rightly noted last week we hadn't really spoken much about William's fantastic radio in Soho, which we should actually visit one of these days.
Soho Radio.
Exactly. Would you like to quiz him about it?
Yes. I'm assuming you still do it, William. And what can you tell us more about it?
Well, Soho Radio has been going for about 4 years now, and it's a station that was created for that community in London. And, of course, being a digital station, it's it reaches its tentacles across the world, octopus-like, and it has a lot of interesting presenters on there, some people from the sort of presenters from the 80s and so on, and I do a food show on it, which is currently off-air because I'm taking a break while I sit down here in Somerset where I am writing my next book. So I'm sure it'll come, I think maybe come back on air when they move into a new exciting location in March.
Oh, wonderful. And can you tell us a bit more about this book at all, or do we have to hold on and wait for a while?
Well, I always think it's one shouldn't talk about books while one's writing one. You know, it's a bit like that. There was a cartoon I once saw where two people at a drinks party are talking. One says to the other, "I'm writing a book," and the other one goes, "Neither am I." But it's called The Restaurant. It's a history of eating out. And I'm making steady, slow progress, prevaricating, as I often do with books, as everyone who writes does. I'm currently eating my breakfast of champions and watching Tsitsipas being beaten in the first set by Rafael Nadal at the Melbourne Open. But what I would say is that it starts in Pompeii, which is a great place to start because, of course, Pompeii was a great center of civilization and hospitality. It's where all the Romans went to party. And because it was frozen in time, August the 24th, AD 79, its bars and restaurants are pretty much intact. So you, by wandering around Pompeii and exploring, you can see pretty much how the Romans and their chums ate out. So that's where the story starts, and then it'll kind of go through the centuries and up to date now and look into the future.
Which means we just wait for Kira to put those last two questions to you. Off you go, Kira.
So, William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Enormously. I love the big crowd you've got there, Alex.
I know, it's loads of us. Usually there's only about three.
Yeah, it's the growing range of Telegraph food critic William Sitwell's fans, you see.
It's just all the octopus going around, that's what it is. And would you like to join us again soon?
I believe I may be appearing on your radio show. Well done.
Like a stone, and I fell heavy into your arms. These days of darkness, which we've known, will blow away with this new sun. But strong, and use my head alongside my heart, so tame my flesh
and fix my eyes. A tethered mind freed from the lies. And I
so forth. We can't live without the whole essence of energy and such like. And it seems that the recent research has suggested that actually, although we can't live without it, as many as one in four British folk have to live in cold conditions because they can't afford to heat their homes. Fuel poverty affecting thousands across the country each year. Now, to talk a bit about ways to hopefully cope with this and the research that's been put together, I'm delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Money Expert, the awesome Jason Smith. How are you, Jason?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Good. So, I mean, this particular research, in one sense, the fact that, you know, as fuel prices continue to rocket up and then feather downwards and so on, it's no surprise that as we head towards the third decade of the 21st century, a lot more people are having difficulty actually just holding things together when it comes to energy.
Yeah, that's very true. From the research that we conducted at moneyexpert.com, what we were seeing, as you said, were some kind of concerning numbers. And the fact that now people are having to make decisions whether to feed their family or to turn on the heating is really concerning, especially in 2019 in a first world country. And it's about, you know, trying to understand how best we can help to drive down the cost of that energy, really.
Is it a case of constantly switching to change providers? Because I've just spent, say, 20 minutes this morning just trying to get through to one energy company and consistently have very loud music played with "Your call is important to us. Please continue to wait."
Yes, I think that's one element to it. Certainly, in terms of comparing and switching to a supplier that's offering a more competitive tariff is the first way that you can save an awful lot of money. We've seen that on average, customers can save about £250 per year as it stands at the moment. But the price cap is due to go up twice more this year on a standard variable tariff. So it's due to go up again in April and in October. So if you lock in a good deal now, you're protecting yourself against those further price rises to come later on in the year. So in the end, you could end up saving yourself almost £400 or £500 just by getting the best deal for you in your area.
It's obviously worthwhile considering things like double glazing, roof insulation, draft proofing as well to improve scenarios. But again, we're constantly told it's relatively easy to actually make the switch. In practice, is it getting easier, or is it just a case of, well, that's the sort of rhetoric we've come to expect from the advertising companies?
No, it is definitely getting easier. And certainly something that we did at moneyexpert.com to make it easier for people. We had a whole, you know, call centre and energy advisors who were there to actually talk people through the best deals in their area. And there's a telephone number on our website so that people can actually speak to a human being about it rather than being a little bit confused about the online journey. And also we have people actually out, you know, in residential areas as well, discussing and talking to people in venues. So, you know, we've tried to make it as easy as possible for people to find the best prices for them. If they have no problems with using the internet and they're internet savvy, then they can use the website to do it. Otherwise, they can speak to a real person here in the UK who can talk them through it and walk them through the best deals that are available. But that's one thing. And also, for example, if you turn down your thermostat by just 1 degree, on average, that would save you £80 per year. So every degree that you turn it down, you're going to save money doing that. And there are a whole host of money-saving tips on our website, moneyexpert.com, which could, if you use them all, save you up to about £750 per year.
It's clearly, as I say, the two big whammies, which will be coming around very shortly, council tax and, of course, electricity costs.
Yes.
If, from what we've been talking about this morning, you can actually reduce one to pay off possible increases in the other, at least you get a kind of budget-neutral approach.
I think so. I think, you know, energy is a very, very expensive part of our regular bills that come through. So any ways in which we can reduce that and save money doing it, then we should. I mean, unfortunately, in this marketplace, loyalty to any of the big six really means that you're going to get penalised. You're not going to be rewarded for staying with a company for 10 years. They'll just overcharge you to the tunes of £300-£500 a year. So, you know, make sure that you're getting the best deal possible in your local area.
There's a whole range of discussions we can have about ethics and the essence of loyalty and so on and so forth, but we won't go into that now. Just remind us once again the best website to go to follow up some of the key things that we talked about today, Jason.
Well, if you go for more information, there's loads on moneyexpert.com. And if you're looking to switch, then you can also go to simplyswitch.com.
Jason Smith, Chief Executive Officer of Money Expert. Many thanks indeed. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Take care now.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh my God.
Now, on a completely different line, when we actually moved to ONS Statistics, Office of National Services Statistics, etc., we find that 42% of modern marriages end in divorce. And with two-thirds of the over-60s admits that they've nothing in their will to protect their assets should their children's marriages end in divorce, you might sort of think that's a matter of some concern. And to talk about this and share some of the thoughts about something which might be seen as quite sad, really, with the quickie divorce system coming through, we're delighted to welcome back to the programme lawyer from Slater and Gordon, the awesome Precious Igbokwe. How are you, Precious?
Hi, good morning.
Excellent. So, Precious, talk us through this particular finding in which 67% of Britain's older generation of parents, whilst they might be leaving at least £100,000 in their will, they might be having issues with respect to where it will be going, what will happen with respect to their grandchildren, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so Slater and Gordon conducted a research that did show that two-thirds of over-60s admit they have nothing to protect their assets, so if that scenario, what's going to happen, their child, you know, his marriage would end in divorce, and which is a concern, and it's something that we want to kind of make people more aware of, that there are protections you can put in place to avoid that happening, your inheritance being impacted in that way.
There is, of course, the line of being disinherited, and you actually would say that's it, you're not getting a penny, because I don't believe in that in any way, shape or form. I mean, are you finding from your own professional area that we're getting much more concerned about, well, we all know we're going to pass on and head off to the great studio in the sky someday, but when it comes to what we're leaving to our offspring, we'll just have to deal with all sorts of other bits and pieces?
Yeah, so a lot of people kind of deal with it in different ways. Some people, if they're worried about their inheritance that they leave their children being ended up involved in division of assets in a divorce, some people might want to not include their child in their will process and may leave them out altogether to avoid that aspect, or some people just aren't protecting their assets in that way. So we just want to kind of remind them there are ways you can protect your assets, there are ways in which you can make sure that your child and only your child gets that inheritance and is not, you know, divvied up in divorce proceedings, or if there's issues in regards to worried about how your child spends their money, the ways in which you can protect that as well. So we're just there just to kind of remind people that we have ways in which we can protect people's assets.
Okay. Now, I think I would prefer to say nobody in the studio is actually married or has children, as far as I'm aware.
Or is divorced.
Oh, we really, Ben. Very, obviously an active life from that point of view. Any thoughts from yourself, Ben?
Yeah, initially I'm just looking at the statistics, and 42% of marriages in England and Wales end in a divorce. I think it's a staggering number. That's a huge number.
Almost half.
Yeah, that's absolutely mad. It's absolutely crazy.
I didn't want to share it with Phil Leonis and Lily earlier in the programme, but that's America, who knows. Eva.
Do you know what? Divorce has become more, not more popular, but more...
Fashionable.
Well, I suppose you could put it that way, but it's strange, really, because if you're going to get married, you've got to think of the not the consequences, but the outcomes of it. And it, like, money-wise, it does, if with wills and things, it does kind of tend to split families up. It's kind of a big issue, really.
In many ways, Precious, you're as in the legal profession, you kind of have to deal with the fallout of all these kind of things effectively. I mean, you heard Ben there, so he's quite surprised in terms of the high nature of these figures. Do you think it's a case of, you know, that's the world we're living in the 21st century? You know, monogamy is going out of fashion, serial marriages are coming back into fashion.
Yeah, I think people, regarding the reasons why people get married, things like that, they are changing. And the divorce procedure, we do have concerns that it may rise in regards to the quickie divorce process that has come into force from last year. So that's one of the concerns that we do have, that it may kind of cause some concern and some difficulties in regards to the will process and when you're leaving assets to your children or grandchildren, what would happen if, you know, they were to get divorced, how that would be impacted on the inheritance side of things. And also, a lot of, grandparents and parents who are making wills, a lot of the times their children aren't even married yet. So it's not something that really is at the forefront of their mind as to what happens if my child gets divorced in the future. But the reality is 42% of marriages will end this way. So it is something that, people have to kind of have in the back of their minds when they're making the wills as to ways in which they could protect those assets.
So how do we separate the emotions from the practical when it actually comes to sorting out relationship dynamics of children, grandchildren, partners and so on? I mean, because it's easy to actually say, oh, just be totally unemotional and just work on a business decision. But in practical terms, that can be quite challenging.
Yeah, definitely. It's understandable that it would be difficult to separate the emotional from the practical, because it is an emotional situation, it's an emotional topic. You know, you're discussing what happens when you pass away. So it's understandable that there would be an emotion involved in that. But we're there just to provide the practical side and just kind of keep you on the right path and make you think about those kind of uncomfortable questions and scenarios and how we can protect in case those things do happen. So we're there just to provide kind of the practical and realistic guidance to show you what would happen if this, and what you want to do if this would happen, and ways in which we can protect those assets if that does take place.
Abigail, anything you'd like to add from the cultural perspective of a Canadian in the UK?
I don't know. I mean, of course, the number is shocking, the statistics. I'm just thinking about, why the number is so high, and I think it's because it's just more and more now women aren't tied to men. It's not, like, I feel like that has a huge impact on why the number has risen so much, is because now it's not, I can't leave my husband because he is where all my income is coming from. I can't leave my husband because it's a religious, thing. It's I feel like women are being more empowered to, if you don't love someone, then you don't have to be with them anymore. And I feel like that's not something that's happening with new marriages, but with old marriages as well. Mm. So I think we have to consider the age.
Interesting. Yep. Emma?
I'm not actually that surprised with the statistic. I mean, that might be because my parents are divorced, so maybe I'm. I think the meaning of marriage has changed now. So I think, in the past, you got married, you knew it was for forever. You knew it was a long-term thing. And now I don't think people realise how much of a serious commitment it is anymore. They know that when they get married that there is a way out, so it's not taken as seriously anymore, which is why I think divorces are an easy way out for some people.
Okay, and Kira?
I mean, to be fair, I just think that nowadays marriage is more of a, I get to wear, for the women it's like, I get to wear a nice dress and have a fairy tale wedding, and for the men it's like, I've got married, I've got to live with someone nagging at me for the next 20 years, so that's probably why.
That's a bit of a dark
sort of slight generalisation.
That was the generalisation of my mum and dad's
nagging at you for 20
marriage.
Years. Precious, you can see the next generation, who knows what going to happen from that point of view. Where can people go to find out further information about what we've been talking about today, and in particular how Slater and Gordon and so on can actually help with respect to this potential minefield as to if you are creating a will, various other bits and pieces, how do you ensure that things are in place?
Yeah, we can go to the Slater & Gordon website, slaterandgordon.co.uk. There's lots of fact sheets and blogs just discussing about wills and inheritance. And also just one quick thing I want to add as well, that a lot of issues I get with clients as well is that they, a lot of clients, they are separated for a long time, but they either just put off getting divorced for whatever reason, and that could impact if they haven't made a will as well. Just that as well, if they're separated and they don't intend on, you know, getting back together, it's always important just to have a will in place so that you make sure that your assets do go to the, you know, your intended loved ones.
Precious Igbokwe from Slater and Gordon, many thanks indeed. Take care, and let's hope we can actually continue our positivity, and let's be happy and that sort of side of things. Precious, I'm sure we'll speak again. Take care now.
Thank you.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry and they will say it's elementary. Try, try, try to separate them, it's an illusion. Try, 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 and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have none, you can't have one without the other.
And presumably the 20 years of nagging at people. Oh well, Frank Sinatra, that takes us out of the sequence. Thanks to Phil Leonis, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Lou Bevan, Craig Bennett, Jason Smith, and William Sitnell, and Precious Igbokwe in the studio. Thanks to Ben Lewis, he's gone now. He's just had enough, really. And Emma Street, Kira Olsbrook, Abigail LeMay, and of course, the one and only Eva MacDonald. Back again next week, ladies.
Yeah,
we'll
be back, yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good, marvellous. Sorry, I'm sure the throat will get better before too long. I'm making it like a seal there. I go, perhaps I'll just clap my flippers together and all will be well, as long as we don't have any octopuses, which is within that whole thing. Great stuff coming on as far as Siren Radio is concerned. Don't forget, this evening we're at Royal Radio again, another emerging form which talks about all great things happening at the Lincoln Theatre Royal, or the new Theatre Royal Lincoln. That's it. We're out of here, leaving you with the joys of Without Me and Halsey, a little touch of Bad Dream House. Can we all say Happy National Compliment Day? Oh, yeah. A one, two, three.
Happy National Compliment Day.